You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time, The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. It's been on fire this season. Nigel Hayes-Davis, Kemba Walker, James Nunnally is coming to you soon. And now it's time. Let's just take it up a notch. Why not? Listen up, my peeps. Welcome to the podcast, Mr. Chima Moneke. My man, I'm so happy to have you, dude. You have no idea how happy I am for you to be here.
Honestly, it means a lot because I've been watching and listening to your show for years, and it makes me feel like I'm doing something right that I'm here. So I appreciate that.
Man, this is the quickest turnover I've ever had from like sitting having that courtside conversation pregame back on January 3rd when y'all made that big comeback against Panathinaikos and actually getting you on the show. So I personally have to thank you for making it happen because it's you guys that ultimately make this happen for us. I know we have to go through our channels, but we get it going and I'm just happy that you're here, man.
I'm like I said before, I'm definitely glad to be here. And yeah, it's been a long time coming.
Do I need to apologize about bringing up James Nunnally's name in the intro or not?
Not at all. You know, that's a guy that I have mutual friends with. My one of my favorite people, my favorite coaches from UC Davis, John Omesker Jones. He used to coach him. And actually after that game, you know, he started a group chat because we're, you know, two of his favorite players. And you know,
what happened? I've heard of it, but I never really saw it. What happened?
I think I was 5 for 7 from the free throw line, or 3 for 5 from the free throw line. Before that moment, I got an offensive rebound, and you know, I have 2 shots to make us win the game. We're down 1, and you know, they were reviewing something. So Zach LaDain and James Nunnally, they came over and they just, you know, tried to get in my head, and I embraced the moment, and I enjoyed it. Right. And, you know, I came out on top that time.
I mean, I think the game's missing some of that, man. I really do. I mean, I remember when I was playing, like, I used to love, like, sitting at the foul line and, like, taking the ball off the rim, you know, because there was something you could do in Europe when that ball hits the rim. So I'd go by the guy shooting the foul, so I'm like, don't shoot it short now. If that ball touches the rim, I'm getting it, you know?
See, that I completely agree with you. It's gamesmanship. To me, yeah. That's respect. Like, it's not, they didn't say anything disrespectful. They didn't do anything that was out of line. I appreciate that kind of,
right,
those kinds of things, because I think it makes the sport more entertaining. And, you know, I'm sure the next time we play, it's going to make the game even more interesting to fans as well.
Yeah, and that situation, yeah, might get turned around on that. You walk by and do the same thing. I love
right,
it.
Exactly.
I think the word you use perfectly is gamesmanship. That's what it is. It's what it's all about, man.
Absolutely.
But I need you to know the deal, though, man, because I almost canceled this interview on you.
Wow.
I do up the Basconia to do the game, right? And I come up to you, I ask you to ball out, because for us guys that do the game, we want to see, you know, we want to see something spectacular, you know? And what you did, which is great for me, I said, but on the way home, my wife's in the passenger seat, right? We're driving. She's like, hey, man. She's like, you know, I got a new boyfriend. I said, who? She said, that Tima guy.
Wow.
I said, wait a minute. I said, hold on. I said, hold on a second. Yo, we got this little thing, you know, where I got my girl, she got her boy. I said, wait a minute. I said, what happened to Snoop Dogg?
Because
that was her boyfriend before. She's like, no, I broke up with him.
Yeah, I mean, Snoop versus me, it makes a lot of sense. So
but you know the problem for me is like Snoop's like in LA and Miami. I ain't gotta worry about him. I got like she ain't coming to no more games. I can tell you that right now.
Right. Listen, I'm a good guy. I'm gonna stay away from that. But shout out to my new girlfriend too. I don't even know her name, but it's my new girlfriend.
Yeah, there you go. Her name's Ava, by the way. I said, it's the first time she's made my podcast.
That's amazing. That's a good story.
Hey, man, let's jump in a little bit about your life, man. It's crazy, dude. Your whole story is just it's almost not even comprehensible, you know? Nigeria, you're born in the capital city. Your dad's from Sydney. or your mother was from Sydney, right?
My parents are both Nigerian. Dad's name is Sydney, yeah.
And like you spent, because there's a diplomatic type family, I mean, you've been traveling all over the place. You spent time without even seeing your parents?
Absolutely, yes. I went from 2009 to 2022 without seeing my dad.
13 years.
And I went from 2009 to 2018 without seeing my mom.
And who were you with all that time?
So from 2009 to 2013, I moved back to Australia and all of the kids were there. All my parents were finishing up in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And so I was living with my oldest brother at the time for 4 years. And then I got a scholarship to go to junior college in Nebraska. So from 2013 to 2017, I didn't see anyone in my family. I was just out there by myself and, you know, builds character.
Dude, that's crazy, man. That's, you know, because, you know, in our game, in our sport, you hear so many stories, in a lot of sports, you hear so many stories about, you know, people that have good families, they were brought up without a parent, you know, or you know, whatever. I mean, I did the Bobby Dixon story and like, it wasn't a bad situation. It just wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, you see some situations where they're bad situations. Yours wasn't a bad situation. It was just that you were just separated from your folks. And man, that it does build character, but it's got to be difficult also.
Yeah, definitely. I guess just my life growing up was never normal, but I didn't understand how unnormal it was until I got to Nebraska at 17. And I realized that, you know, the traveling that I did is just, you know, most people don't get to do that.
Right.
And obviously, there's a lot of good things that come with that, you know, learning about other cultures, being smarter, being a better human. And then the bad side of it is, you know, you make friends and then you leave them. And then in my case, it was, because basketball also became a dream and a goal of mine. Like, I chased that knowing that I'm going to spend time away from my family and, you know, yeah, definitely tough. It's still tough to this day, you know. And sometimes I don't see my family, but because I have money now and, you know, I can fly them out here and see them multiple times a year. So I think that's what I do it for. All the hard times are, the hard times in my life are past me now. And a lot of the things that I work for, you know, I've achieved them.
That's awesome, man. I mean, it's just, your whole story is really cool. We're going to get into all, but what would have happened if you would have went the soccer route?
Oh,
I mean, you think you were good enough?
Oh my goodness, I was. Oof, I would be a star, 1,000%. I know that for a fact.
First of all, you can't run up and down a soccer field with that dude, right?
Oh my god,
you'd have to get that. Listen, you know, those soccer players got that. It's kind of like mine. You know, they got it shaved tight on the side.
Yeah,
you know?
But I'm a trendsetter, though. You know, we don't follow rules. We make stuff happen over here. You know. Edgar Davis with the goggles, that's who I would have been. But for me, like, soccer was my first love for sure. And, you know, if I wasn't 6'5 and a half, then I would 1,000% be a soccer player at a big team somewhere.
Nice. I always see that. I think it's when we do the, on the TV, we do like the profile of the players. And I think it's Jana Musa who said if he wasn't a basketball player, he'd be a soccer player. I was like,
yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
yeah. I'll keep my comments to myself on that one. So like, how was it like when you started playing basketball? Like, I mean, I'm looking somewhere along the line. Like, where was your break? You know what I mean? I know they say you played with Dante Exum in college, and I'm assuming I was in Australia, obviously. And you got noticed there. You know, in a game, but I mean, when do you feel like your the break was? Was it going to Nebraska? Because Nebraska is not really a break now. I mean, between you and I,
I think it depends on how you look at it. You know, the first break was me getting that scholarship to get to America because before I got that, I was emailing schools. Like, I still have YouTube videos of me when I was horrible, and you know, I had those clips and, you know, that's what I was hoping would get me a scholarship. And I emailed them to hundreds of schools and over a probably 3 to 6 month period, I got two responses from teams and they weren't even interested. It was just, you know, like a, we see you keep working type of thing. And, you know, I almost, it was like, all right, well, maybe this is not for me, but I didn't know how to stop. And then my senior year of high school, you know, in Australia, we call it college, but it was high school.
Right.
Playing with Dante. Dante was, at the time, he was supposed to be going to college. He was, you know, going to go to Indiana, but this was before he became an NBA guy. But at that time, he was still the, you know, the hottest junior, hottest player coming out of Australia. So everyone was watching him. Some guy happened to see me. Trevor Burnett, shout out to him. He was the old assistant coach at that junior college, moved back to Australia. And, you know, he still lives there. He saw me. He gave me a chance. That's the first break.
Right.
And then if you're talking about get into the, I would say the next stage is going to the tournament.
Well, you played two or three years of JUCO.
2 years of JUCO, redshirted at Davis, and what, then played 2 years.
That's what I couldn't understand. Why'd you redshirt coming from a junior college?
I'm not sure either. That was not in the plans, but it worked out perfectly. But
yeah. Let me explain for anybody that doesn't know. Usually back in the day when you transferred colleges, you had to sit out a season, which never, ever made any sense to me. And I could go back far enough to tell you that back in my day, if you transferred within the same conference, you had to sit out 2 years.
Oh, that's nasty.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nasty.
I mean, when you're looking to make a living out of this, that's 2 years of money-making time, you know?
Yeah, that's a big setback. So I came out of junior college, did 2 years there, and, you know, redshirting was never talked about when I committed to Davis.
Mm-hmm.
But it ended up working out where that season they weren't that good, and the best player was a senior. He was at my position. So I wouldn't have played as much as I knew I should have. And it took me a couple months to really embrace it.
Right.
But I think by like December or January of that redshirt season, I embraced it. And I was just the best player then. During that season, I made sure that I would be ready, you know, for my redshirt junior season. And then that next season was when we went to the tournament. First and only time in school history.
Hey, man, you know, I always find something to be jealous about with you guys about, you know? I mean, I'm always jealous that you guys are playing. I'm not, you know? But like, when I see, because I was at Niagara University, small school also, man, and, like, it was my dream to go to that damn dance, and we never made it because I don't know if you remember Reggie Lewis. Reggie Lewis played for the Celtics.
Of course.
Yeah, Reg was, like, the number one player in the league. I was the number two player in the league the whole time. And man, that bastard, he kept me out of that dance every year, man.
Four years.
And we were boys too, you know. We became boys after the third year.
Damn, Reggie. So speaking of Reggie's, that year in March Madness, Reggie Miller was one of the guys calling my games, and he said that I was a special player and, you know, look out for this guy. So like, I would say that was my second biggest break. And you know, March Madness was like my goal up until that point.
Right.
And then, you know, there's other things that I could consider breaks, but I would say the third major one was Manresa.
Right.
You know, just I think that put me on the map.
That's over your left shoulder right there.
Yeah, in case people don't know.
I got that coming. Don't worry.
Yeah. So that was my next break. And I think those are the three that I would definitely say.
But before all that, once you started to get established, let's say you went to France and you played what's called Pro B, right? Second division.
Yes.
And I mean, a lot of your story is somewhat similar to mine, where I was cut from Sacramento, you know, like I was cut the day before the guaranteed date, which back then it was December 14th. It was 15th was the date. I got cut on the 14th. I went to Italy. I was balling out. They cut me before the playoffs because they wanted somebody taller than me. Then I went to Malaga, and you know, I almost got cut three times in the first 2 months. You know, and I'm thinking the same thing that I saw you say. Like, man, I just got cut from the NBA. I got cut from Italy. I got cut from Spain. Who's gonna? He's like, I'm just like somebody's trash right now. You know, like, where am I gonna get my break from? You've been doing the same thing. Even in Pro B, I mean, you had a tough time.
That was my first experience of professional basketball in Pro B. I got cut, you know, three games into the regular season. And I was a 22-year-old kid that had friends in the NBA. And ultimately, I knew that I could play in the NBA. But I'm thinking, you know, when I got cut, I'm like, how can I play in the NBA if I'm getting cut in Pro B?
Right.
So, you know, there were times where I questioned myself, and it just didn't seem realistic to other people. I think a lot of my life has been unrealistic to a lot of other people, but for some reason, I just kept believing. I said, okay, well, maybe it's just a year later, or a year, or it's, I need to take a different route than I probably expected or wanted. But, you know, I kept persevering, and eventually I got to where I knew I would always get to.
One of my big questions that I've come up with in my mind through researching you and watching you is what do you think it was that kept that perseverance going? What do you think it was, like, every time you got knocked down? Because it doesn't seem like, even though you talk about it a lot, it doesn't seem like you're the type of person, because you feel, you're like, deep down, you look and seem like a sensitive person. So I think it affects you at first. So you don't just, like, pop up and just, like, all right, man, I'm coming right back. So
no,
I think
way.
I think there's, like, it seems like you go through that stage where you, like, really, really doubt yourself. But what is it that makes you come back? I mean, is there anything in particular that you could talk about other than a desire or you know, because people ask me that, because, and I've always been like, I really don't know. I don't know what made me just keep going. I know that I just wanted to prove people wrong. That was about it. That's all I had going for me.
See, so I would say probably the biggest answer is just how I was raised and the way I grew up. Nigerians are we're very stubborn, but we're very smart. We're very passionate about what we believe in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's a lot of Nigerians that, you know, you get out of Nigeria and they end up being successful in whatever field that they're in, whether it's boxing, engineering, being a doctor, UFC fighters, basketball players, we're just musicians, we're everywhere. But I just think when I set my mind to something, I don't really care how it happens. I just know that that's ultimately what I wanted to do. And all the times where I questioned myself as a player, you know, it didn't change the fact that I didn't have a plan B.
Right.
You know, I had a plan A the whole time. And a lot of people say, you're crazy. You have to have a plan B. What if plan A doesn't work out? No such thing. For me, at least.
Yeah.
For me, at least. And I think if I had a plan B whenever it got hard, like the times when schools weren't responding to my emails, I would have been like, okay, maybe they're all right. Let me go to plan B now.
It makes it.
I never had that.
It definitely makes it easier to quit. You know, people that come from, you know, a lot of money, you know, there's, you know, I don't know if you know any NFL stuff, Andrew Luck,
mm-hmm.
who everybody talked about, you know, he came from a wealthy family of doctors and everything else, and they were like, he's bound to quit someday, you know, and if things go bad. But hey, but you had, I mean, you came back in France and had a good season, you know, in 2020, you know, 16 points a game, almost 7 boards, a couple assists, and then just... Just as, you know, I mean, of course, everybody's got their own story, but COVID hits and it's just like another roadblock for you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just like my story was I get knocked down, I persevere, I get to a new level, then I get knocked down.
Right.
And it's literally been like that since Australia, then JUCO, and then Davis. Australia, like I got cut from a team that I should have made. And then the coach said that, you know, I couldn't think the game at that level. I was just athletic, which is like the first moment where I was like, oh, wow, someone put something in me through words that, like, I don't like, and I'm going to prove this person wrong.
Right.
And then I got to JUCO, and my freshman year of JUCO was very up and down. We weren't that good. Then I finally go crazy my second year. I get to Division I. I redshirt, didn't think that was in the plans. I get to professional basketball, second division, not first, and I get cut. And then I have to spend the rest of that season and then another season in second division. Then my second year that you were talking about, you know, we went undefeated at home, and that was a team that hadn't made the playoffs since 2006, 2007. So, you know, I prided myself on, you know, playing on teams that weren't ever looked at as superior or favorites or anything like that, and then just exceeding expectations. And yeah, I think Monaco was the only team that I've played on that was supposed to be good.
Well, let me go back to what that coach said. I think it was in Australia, where he said that you didn't understand the game well enough, because that questions your basketball IQ, which is something that, you know, you could have as much talent as you want in this world, but you're not going to be a professional. You're not going to be a good professional player unless you have basketball IQ. Did you take that as a slap in the face? Did you take it as like, you know what? Maybe he's right. Maybe I need to learn the game a little bit better. What was your feeling about that?
I was angry.
Well, of course. I mean, anger is always going to be the first feeling, but is it something that you built from that you took from and like, you know what? Maybe he does have a point.
I mean, I think that's the first, like whenever I go back, that's the first time that I remember, okay, I'm going to prove him wrong. And that was just because I should have been on that team. And yeah, obviously if I looked at my tape, my highlights or how I was as a player, then there was probably things I'd be like, damn, I did that. Yeah. But at that level and at that time, I belonged on that team. And obviously I was 15. I started playing basketball at 13. So of course I could get better. Everyone could get better, but for that level, I should have been starting on that team, and I was the last person to get cut. And then what he said was like, yeah, there was a little bit of, you know, yeah, I don't know why he said it. We're not going to get into that exactly, but I just remember it bothered me. And on the car ride home, you know, a friend that made the team, you know, he took me home. He couldn't believe that I didn't make the team, and I was like in shock. I didn't want to cry in front of him, but then I got home, and I was just devastated. And it was like, I turned into a villain in my head, and I started like all the trash talking and like the anger and the complaining, all of that came out because it just felt like everyone was against me
right
at that time when I was in Australia, just because I would tell people I'm going to play in America. I'm going to play in college. I'm going to be a professor. And they laughed at me. They said, oh, Chima's crazy. Chima, like genuinely, like, so I became a very angry basketball player for those two remaining years before I got the scholarship. Like I would block a shot and I would like taunt extra. I would get technical fouls every game. Like it was just, yeah, I had so much built in me because of that. And yeah.
And then Mandresa comes. How do you get to Mandresa?
So after the COVID year, I go to Orleans, my first, you know, first division France. My first division experience, it was in first division France. And at that point, if you're playing in a respectable first division country, other teams would be watching.
Right.
I hadn't played European competition at that point, and I just knew that after this, I needed to go to, you know, a Champions League or a Euro Cup team, whatever it would be. That summer after Orleans, I ended up playing for Team Nigeria. Right. And we beat the U.S. in Vegas.
Yeah,
this is 2021. That. Crazy, crazy time. And at that time, I had a really good year, and I had a lot of interest from a lot of teams in other countries. We knew it was time to leave France. And it came down to, I think it was Manresa versus Murcia, and Badalona as well. My agent said that Manresa, the coach, is the best coach in Spain, and he will get the most out of me. It won't be easy. Practices are tough.
Who was the coach at that time?
Pedro Martinez, still the coach now.
Yeah, I love Pedro, man.
You know, Pedro. Great. So he's incredible. You know, he's just 1,000 games in ACB. But
yeah, he's coached at Basconia a couple times.
Yes, he has in Valencia. You know, but so yeah, we had to make a decision. But when my agent, who I trust with my basketball career, told me that he believed that this is the place for me, like there was nothing really else to think about. Obviously, I talked to a few other people that had played there and knows Pedro and things like that. And yeah, it was just a no-brainer. And it ended up being, yeah, my favorite and the most special basketball season of my life.
I see it there behind you.
That's crazy. We just went back there, and it was very emotional this past week in the ACB League.
Oh, so. That's right. I didn't even think about that, yeah.
Yes. Crazy times. But we started off struggling, you know, and a lot of people, just no one really expected too much from us. All the imports, it was our first year playing in the ACB, so they thought we would struggle, and we did at first, but then we ended up having a magical season going to the finals and Champions League. I was the MVP. I was ACB first team. I think after 28 games, we were third behind Barca and Madrid. And then three of our point guards got hurt, and then we ended up sliding, but it was a crazy season.
You know, I've been out here long enough to know, but you don't need to be out here long enough to know that Manresa ain't supposed to win no championships.
No. You know? For sure.
That's, and they've done it before. I mean, they did it back in the day when I was playing too with T.T. Cruz and all those guys, the old guy. You know, George Gervin played for that team, right?
Of course. I know my Manresa
history. You know your Manresa history, huh?
Saved them from relegation, was averaging over 25. I definitely know that.
I played against the Iceman a couple times when he was here, man. That's how old I am, brother.
Listen, you look good, my man.
I'm trying.
You look good.
I'm trying to keep my weight from running the Basconis, what I'm trying to do.
No comment. I'm going to lock my door.
Yeah, there you go. So in Manresa, you run in, I mean, you'd already known Coach Brown, Mike Brown, from the Nigerian team, right?
And then you
play good in Manresa, and he throws some interest at you when he's with the Kings. And how's that all come about, man? Because now your dream's coming true, you know?
So in Manresa, Mike Brown was still with Golden State. So we didn't really have too much of communication during that season. I just knew from my agents that NBA teams were interested, and a couple NBA teams, you know, were at the games, and it was just, I think from like January, we beat Barcelona, and then things just started to get more serious. And, you know, I think a few months later, my agent was like sure that I would sign somewhere in the NBA without having to play summer league, and, you know, Sacramento was one of the teams interested. And then it was the day of the Champions League final. Never forget it. I woke up to a missed call from Mike Brown. Hadn't heard from him since, like, you know, probably 8 months before that.
Right.
And, you know, I called him back, and he told me that, you know, unofficially, off the record, he's going to be the next head coach of the Kings.
Right.
And he would love to have me there. And I couldn't believe it. I was half asleep. So I was like, is this even happening right now? Is this a dream? And, you know, fast forward, like the next day he was announced as the head coach. And, you know, I finished the season, and Sacramento and a couple other teams sent their offers. And based on what we knew at the time, we thought it would be best to go to Sacramento.
And I mean, what'd you get from that? I mean, I know it wasn't what you expected. It obviously wasn't what you wanted. What'd you get out of it? What's the positives that you took from it?
A lot of great friends, a lot of great teammates, a lot of great connections that I still have to this day. I'm not a victim, you know. I wasn't sad for myself, because for 13-year-old Chima, like, I played in the NBA, I achieved my dream. And not everyone is put on this earth to be an NBA superstar. Like, I was, you know, some people get into college is more impressive than someone who was born with a basketball, who has an NBA dad and gets to the NBA. So you can't compare everyone's situation. Like, from my situation, I shouldn't have even made it to college. So for me to get to the NBA was amazing. Obviously, it wasn't what I wanted, but I don't live life with regrets. I said, maybe this is what I needed for this moment. And if I get a chance to go back, I'll know what I need to do. And I'll know the situations that I need to be in for me to have a chance to succeed. And that's what I took it as. You know, I still have great relationships with a good amount of people over there. Players, staff, you know, physios, front office people. And I think that's what life is about, honestly. I took the good out of a lot of those things. And I'm not a victim at all, but if I get a chance to go back to the NBA, then, you know, I'll do things the right way.
There's a learning process too, you know. But I like the thing about regret. You know, I think the only, like, I look back on decisions that I made, and I regret some of the decisions that I made, but I don't regret the reason why I made them. You know what I mean? It's a big difference, because when you make a decision in life or whatever happens, you have to make the best out of that. The only way you regret it is if you sit back and say, and like you said, play the victim. And like, yeah, someone's like, you know, they hurt me, or they did this to me, or they didn't give me my chance. Like, you know, you got to go out and get your chance, man. Otherwise, you're going to regret. You're going to live with that regret, you know?
1,000%. If you make a decision and you're 50-50 with something else, and as soon as you make that decision, you stop.
Yep.
You know, doing the things that you should have done while you made that decision, then that's when it becomes a mistake. And that's when you just, you made the wrong decision. Yeah. So
once you made that decision, you have to go 100% into that decision. Go 100%. That's the bottom line. But so you get cut by the Kings, made a little bit of money though. You made a little bit of cash.
The day before the guaranteed date, like you. So we get it. on the way to a Stockton Kings G League game, on the phone, never forget it.
I see you representing Stockton right there.
Yeah, I mean, this just happened to be what I was wearing today, but I still got love for both of the organizations. And yeah, I still got friends there, and I honestly watch their games more than anyone else's because I care about the people there. And that's how I am. So
you were on your way driving. I had come back home from playing against the Hawks. We played against Atlanta, and yeah. It was December 14th. And I had a story where we had a couple other rookies on the team where the vets were telling me, because we were terrible. I think the team won like 9 games that whole year or whatever. And Damn. The vets were telling me, dude, you need to go down, like twist your ankle, hurt your back, get on IR, you know, so you don't, you know. I'm like, man, hell, I'm like, hell with that. I said, either they want me or they don't, you know what I mean? So like 2 days later, the point guard that I was boys with, who was a rookie, all of a sudden, man, he goes to the lane, goes up the basket, comes down on his foot. He's like screaming, I think I broke my foot. I'm like, No. I'm like, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. So the next day, we play the Hawks. And I go home, man, it's like 9 o'clock at night after the game. And I ain't been cut yet. I'm like, man, this is great. All of a sudden, at like 11 something at night, my phone rings. And you know who my coach was? My coach was Bill Russell. And so I'm literally sitting on the bathroom with a magazine in my hand. and my girl comes in and she's like, you got a phone call. I'm like, no, I'm not here. She's like, I already told him you were here. I was like, damn, man, it's an hour away.
Yeah, I almost made it. God damn it.
Caught me on the bathroom too. But
yes.
It's crazy, man. It's I always, when I do my motivational speech, I always talk about the fact that, you know, we all dream about, you know, getting the NBA, but in our dreams, you never realize it. You might get cut. You might spend, you know, 8 teams in 2 years, move from here to here. You know, those dreams, when they dreams become reality, sometimes they're not as sweet as they were when you were sleeping.
See, I think it's because we wake up after we get to the NBA. We don't understand that there was a whole nother dream of when we got to the NBA and then all this other things happened. But, it doesn't take away from the fact that you and I are one of, 5,000 people ever to play in the NBA?
Yeah. I mean, amazing. That's what I take from it. I was in the same position with you. I wasn't as far away as you were, but I had no chance to make the NBA. When I was playing college ball, I was like, that ain't going to happen. I got spotted in one game because I balled out against a future number one draft pick, and then all of a sudden my name got on the radar, and I was just lucky. But let's get back to you, man. We go to Monaco. Now you go to Monaco. I mean, Mike James is my boy now. Mike James to me is like number one. Now he's up there number one with Shane Larkin. Those are like my two guys.
Okay.
And I did Mike on a crossover, man, and I think Mike is, in a different way than you, is misunderstood by so many people that don't actually get to know Mike, because Mike's one of the nicest guys I've ever met, and Mike's probably the most research I did on a player in this podcast in the crossover, because I called his ex-teammates. I called Toko, I called Fabian Cosser, I called a bunch of different people. I was like, I need to know what this guy's about. You know, and nobody had one bad word to say about Mike. And Mike's got like that bad rep, you know what I mean? And I thought we cleared it up on the crossover, but I love that guy, man. But what was he like as a teammate?
I mean, honestly, we started off, you know, not on the same page. Just because Mike, he's like, he doesn't trust everybody. Right. And he needs to see who you are and how you behave in certain situations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't get off to the best start in terms of just everything. And, you know, we had an incident, I think it was against Panathinaikos, I think, where, you know, I tried to calm him down and then he pushed me. And, you know, that was like the lowest point. And then he came back from a suspension and then we just became like really good friends, like that. And we needed that. And like off the court, you know, I got his back through anything. Like even now, like we FaceTime after each, like it's crazy. Whenever they play, we text or we FaceTime. Whenever I play, he'll call me. You know, we see each other. We got lunch together. We did. That's my guy, you know. Yeah. And he, like you said, he's misunderstood, but he doesn't care to like explain to the people that don't matter who he really is. Mm. The people that know who he is, we know who he is. And that's what matters.
And I respect that, man. And the thing about it is, like, you know, with all the situations that he's been through, you know, getting booted, you know, from Milan, and you know, whatever happened in Cesca, you know, I went through it with him, man, in the interview, and man, he answered every question with not just like well spoken, but with class.
Yeah.
And he did it in his way. And man, I just looked at him. I was like, dude, he's so misunderstood. It's crazy. I mean, the guy knows what he's doing. I love me some Mike James, man. I really
for sure,
do.
For sure. He's a real one. He's a genuine person. You know, people that know him all know that. You know, fans see, you know, him on the court and they make judgments about him as a player or him as a person. And a lot of it is unfair. Some of it, you know, sometimes it's fair. But there are certain things that you just, you know, keep your judgments to basketball and don't make judgments on someone that you don't know personally.
I don't know how y'all do it, man. I don't, with all this Instagram BS and Twitter and all this, the X, whatever you want to call it now. I don't know how y'all do it, man. It was easy for me not to walk down and look at the newspaper, you know, when I was playing. But now your phone's beeping all night long telling you how bad you are sometimes.
Yeah, honestly, like, yeah, you play two bad games and you're the worst player in the gym and you lost this guy $10,000 and then you play a good game and you're the, like, it's, I take it, it's all conditional love. Exactly. Social media is conditional. What keeps me uplifted is I've never had a bad interaction with any fan in person.
Right.
I've had, like, you know, when they're supporting their team, they give me the finger. Or
yeah, of course.
They call me, which is fine. I like that. But on the street, there's I don't care, you know, the places where I'm not liked, whether it's Barcelona or Valencia, I take more photos than anyone else whenever I go to these places, whenever I go anywhere. And to me, that's what matters. Social media, people give their opinions, their BS opinions that don't matter. But in person, I'm sure some of the people that have gave me bad opinions on social media have taken photos with me. So that's how I look at life.
And you know what? When one day if you sign in Barcelona, you sign in Valencia, you sign wherever, they're all going to love you again anyways. All those people that hated you are going to love you anyway. So it's just...
Yeah, that's how it goes. Listen, I'm a big soccer fan, and I've seen Ronaldo, I've seen Figo, I've seen all these guys play for Barcelona and then play for Madrid. So for me, if that can happen, it just proves that, yeah, it's all conditional. I'm not going to name his name, but this Valencia reporter, when I was playing in Manresa, he was calling me like the most charismatic, the most fun, the most entertaining basketball player in the ACB. He said Valencia has to sign him, blah, blah, blah. And then we played in Valencia and like I was playing against his team and I'm with Baskonia. And then after the game, he tweeted something like, oh, he doesn't respect his opponents. I never want him here, blah, blah, blah. And then some fan like recognized it. And you know, just this, a year and a half ago, he was tweeting all these beautiful things about me. So,
right.
You know, he knows who he is. If he sees this, he's going to be embarrassed again. But like,
he better be watching it.
He better. I know he will be because all these guys tweet about me. And whenever I play a bad game, they want to tweet about me. He knows who he is. And it just proves that people are conditional and people's opinions on January 15th will not be their opinions on April 14th.
Man, exactly.
Whatever.
And what's the deal with your name, man? Like, Monet, like you had me scared. You had me scared shitless, man. All of a sudden, like, we get this email from EuroLeague and IMG about, you know, make sure you say his name right. And I ain't done your game yet. And I'm like, and then I looked it up on our, you know, we had the pronunciation thing that y'all do in the beginning of the season. And there's one point where you said Shima. You didn't say Chima. You said Shima.
No, never. Never would say
I'm gonna,
the best.
I'm gonna send it to you. You did two versions of it. The first one sounded like Shima.
No. Definitely not with an S. That's one that bothers me with the S. But I would never say that. I think my last name is the one that I give some leeway to, because in America they pronounce it Maneki. In Davis, you know, in college, I accepted that.
Right.
In Spain, they say it the best, Moneque. That's the most common.
But who'd you have the problem with? EuroLeague or with? I thought it was with the Spanish guys.
It was no. It was a EuroLeague commentator. I still don't know who it is.
Oh, we don't need to put his name up. I don't want to get in trouble.
I don't know his name, but I know his voice. And yeah, everyone, you can watch my Zalgiris highlights, and I think that's the first time I tweeted it. You know, I had a career high game, and it still hurts me to like watch those highlights, because every time I score, he's calling me Monica, and like I don't see how you call me Monica. There's no I, there's no A, you know. So you know, my family. I think that's also for my family. Like, just pronounce the names right, especially since I'm not a rookie. This is my 6th year playing professional basketball. It doesn't take too long to do some research.
Hey man, in the States, I'm Arlucas. Over here in Spain, I'm Arlaucas. And in Lithuania, I'm Arlauskas. And you know what I tell everybody? I'm like, as long as you keep calling me, I don't care what you call, how you say
See,
it.
I mean, I respect that.
No, but you're playing now, though. You need
for to- me, I'm, you know, for my family and for me, you know, saying the name right. You know, actually, this is random, but I think one of my biggest pet peeves is whenever someone's talking about someone else and they say his name wrong, and they say, or whatever his name is. I just think that's disrespectful.
Yeah.
You know, respect the guy.
I did the Valencia game the other day, and they get in my ear because Cassius Robertson was playing. And, you know, when the game's going fast, you know, like, you know, James passes to Robinson to whatever. And they're like, hey, man, you're saying Robinson. It's Robertson. I'm like, man, I'm not saying Robinson. I'm like, that's not like some crazy European name or Russian name that I can't pronounce. You know, that's like my homeboy, you know, Robertson. It's easy. But if it just comes out sometimes and it sounds different, you know, but it's hard, man. I'm not going to say
no,
it's.
No, but that's different, though. That's a mispronounce. That's just like a slip up of words between things that are similar. Right. Like Dushko will say, he will confuse Mike and Matt Costello. Mike, Matt. Right. So that's different. But the guy genuinely did not do any research, and then he did it in another game after I tweeted about it a week or 2 weeks later, and it was like, okay, now you're not trying.
Well,
it's not a slip.
I got the message, man. I went up to Baskonia scared. I gotta do this right.
I appreciate you, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, you get the Monaco, Mike, and you guys had a squad. I mean, you got player MVP on, I think, around 28 or something like that. 13 rebounds, whatever. You guys go to a game five against, who'd y'all play?
Maccabi.
Maccabi. Yeah, exactly. Go game five, and you had a big role in that. But it seemed like you and Sasha didn't get. Y'all weren't on the same page at times.
No, we weren't. And that happens. I think every EuroLeague team has a player or two or three or four that doesn't get along. That's just how it goes. And not just in basketball, but just in sports and life. Some people just don't get along with each other for whatever reason. I wasn't his type of player, and, you know, I didn't play as much as I know I should have, but just also the system in Monaco is more for the guards, and the guards control everything, and it just limited me as a player, and it killed my confidence a little bit, and it made basketball not fun. I think that's the thing that made me the most sad. Like, basketball wasn't fun. I was making the most money I had in my career, but it was the second worst time of my career since I got cut. You know, my first year, so.
I mean,
I just didn't want to feel that
but
again.
But it's hard, too, coming from a season like you had at Manresa, to go back, even after everything, and repeat that. Because, you know, once once you're there and you feel that you taste that sweetness of the dessert, man, it's like you don't want to put nothing else in your mouth. You want everything to be good, but every year is a different year, man. That's why this game.
For sure. But just knowing who I am and like I'm very realistic with these things, and I knew it when I played in Manresa that I was one of the best players in Europe. Mm-hmm. Simple. And I knew that if I would be in the right situation, I would prove that like I am now. But also Europe, there's a lot of great players that aren't playing up to their potential for reasons out of their control. And I always understand that. And coming to Monaco, like obviously the money was great, but I looked at that team and I said, if I go to this team and I can do what I know I can do, we're winning it all. No. And I still stand on that. If I was let to be myself a little bit more, we would have won everything last season. And I truly believe that.
It was tough getting to that Final Four and losing, wasn't it?
Oh my goodness. That third quarter, Yeah, that third quarter is definitely my least favorite basketball memory ever. Man, ever.
I was sitting there going, man, and I love all the guys on that team. I was just like, man, I can't cheer for anybody, but I always kind of cheer for the underdog, no matter what. I love the underdog. And it was like, to see you guys up there, go to the Final Four, to get there, I was like, man, and I love the story, you get the story of Monaco coming in the league. It was all set up perfectly. That third quarter just went, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, we move on from that.
Let's move on. You find for now, anyways, you find a home in Victoria. I played there for 3 years. I told you that the last one.
Of course. I've done my research on you probably 5 years ago. Like I've seen
5 years ago.
When I came to Europe, I said I need to learn more about European basketball. I need to learn who's who.
Hey man, my videos were still in color. They were in color.
I did Wikipedia, I did Google, I did articles,
I appreciate that,
I didn't do the VCRs or nothing like that. don't worry about it. But I did my research for sure, and your career is just what you've done, what you achieved is just amazing. And your name just will stand the test of time in European basketball.
I appreciate that, man. Definitely
got to give you your flowers for sure.
I appreciate it, man. A lot of you guys, I walk up to you, you all kind of look at me like that old man, like, who's this guy? It's like you kind of immediately knew me. And your boy,
come on, man.
I talked to your boy TJ on the sideline too, man. He was at the game, and I was like, dude, you keep balling out like you're balling out. You're going to be here playing with him next year. He's like, that's the plan, bro.
Obviously, we don't know what the future holds.
Right.
But that's my absolute best friend in the whole world.
You keep playing you're playing. You might have a little say in it.
I mean, listen, for me, I'm happy with what he's doing in Paris. And if they keep playing like they're playing, right, they will be in EuroLeague. So
exactly.
He won't leave that situation if that happens, but...
Yeah,
who knows what happens.
I love Victoria, man. I mean, those three of my best years were there, man. The city's beautiful. The people, when you win, the people are amazing. When you lose, you got to stay home a little bit more than you normally would anywhere else.
I mean, okay, so for me, I stay home a lot just because I'm focused this season. I'm locked in, and that's how I like to be during the season. But honestly... It's another in person. Like they love me here.
Right.
After a win, after a loss, they love me.
The things you do on the court is kind of like what I did when I played. It was like, you just embrace the fans. You embrace the pageantry of it. I'm gonna talk about that at the end. But I want to go over this. Like I went over all your stuff before this, and I looked at your numbers a little bit. I'm not much of a stats guy. I'm more of the intangible type guy that watches, for example, the fact that, you're in the top in rebounding is kind of crazy. But I mean, that's what got you pretty much where you are. Some people say, you need to shoot the three. Everybody can shoot the three if you go out and practice. No one goes out and does defensive drills, or no one goes out and throws the ball up with dummies all around and tries to get rebounds. You know what I mean? So when you get that point of your game done and people start noticing that, that's great. But I guess what I'm getting at, like, your stats are good, and they're really good. But the thing that amazed me the most is that I looked at him. You're number two in the league in rebounding, and you're behind your boy Dada, which is kind of crazy. Santa Cruz. I mean, it's crazy that he's up there. He averaged 4 rebounds his whole career. All of a sudden, he's up in first place in rebounding, which is nuts. But if I look at, and I look at all the other offensive categories, I'm just looking at the top five now. You're not in any other top five category, but yet you're number four in point index rating. I think that's kind of says a lot about your game, to me anyways, as an ex-player, as someone who like watches it. The fact that you're in the rebounding, you're not in the top five in points, you're not in the top five in assists, you're not in the top five in three-point percentage or whatever, but you're number four. And number five is Toko Sengele, who is my boy. I love me some Toko. And then in front of you, you got our boy, Mike James, Shane Larkin, and Nikola Mirotic. Dude, that's good company, my man.
That's great company.
Those guys didn't get cut from some Australian team. Those guys.
No, they did not. Those are millionaires. Those are millionaires.
They didn't go to Nebraska. They didn't go to Nebraska and play.
Listen, honestly, it's still kind of weird seeing my name there. Just because
embrace it, my man. Embrace it, brother.
Oh, I am because I've visualized this for so long, and I've told myself and other people I'm one of the best players in Europe. Like I will stand on that. But you just get tired of telling everyone else that. Like I like being told by other people now that you're one of the best players in Europe, and it just confirms to me again that everything that I and everything that I work for is just it pays off. And with the rebounding thing, there's a lot of people that are selfish when it comes to scoring points. A lot of people, they think that the best way to impact the game is I gotta score. You'll see them on a 2-on-0, they got a teammate ahead of them, but they say, I gotta score this one.
I got no comment, that, man.
that's never been me. That's never been me. I came into the game, and when I started playing, I was maybe 6'2 or 6'3. At 13 years old, I couldn't dribble, couldn't shoot. But my motor was just better than everyone else's, and I just had a knack to get rebounds. I could see it coming off the rim.
That's what you have. You have the sense of where the ball is going. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy because I kind of felt like I had the same thing. Like I couldn't get up. I couldn't jump. I mean, I could jump if I was on a run, but I couldn't jump off of 2 feet. But I always had a sense that when I saw that ball coming, I knew where it was going to hit the rim, and I knew where it was going, and about 85% of the time, I was right. Sometimes you go one way and it goes the other way because you misread it. But you have you have that sense of where the ball is going to land, and a lot of rebounds you catch on the run. You catch them like coming off the rim, and you just grab them and go, which is really cool. I love watching it. It's something. It's a knack that not too many people have. And my biggest thing is like, you go out and miss 6 shots, a coach is going to take you out of the game. But you go out and get 6 rebounds, you ain't coming out of that game.
You better stay in that game.
Exactly.
You better stay in that game. Yeah, like, rebound is very underappreciated. And, I pride myself on my rebounds and my efficiency. Scoring 20 points but taking 20 shots, to me, that does nothing.
Yeah.
And, getting blocks, getting steals, just being effective. Like I pride myself on those things. And, defensively, like I also pride myself on that side of the ball. I know I make mistakes. I know I like to take chances that, other people wouldn't take, and I can get away with some things because I'm athletic, I'm explosive, and I can make certain plays, but I feel like I'm an underrated defender as well. No. And for me, it's both sides of the ball. And I always say this to people. If you're playing basketball, 5-on-5, that's 10 people on the court. How many basketballs is there? There's one. That means 9 people are off the ball.
You better know where it is.
So, are you a good player only when you have the ball in your hands?
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably going to be 5% of the time, 10% if you're a really good player. The other time, what are you doing? You just waiting for the ball to get there? You standing around on defense? For me, like, Don't give me the ball. I'm going to find the ball off the rim.
Yeah.
I'll go get it.
I love
it. That's how I've always been.
They told me that years ago, man. There's 20,000 people in the stands. There's 10 players, you know, 24 players all together. You got six coaches between the two teams. You got three referees, but there's only one damn orange rock on the button there. And you better know where it is at all times.
Better know where it is. But when you don't have it, what are you doing? Are you effective?
Exactly.
And to me, I know I am. And I pride myself, and I've always prided myself on that. You know, people look at my height and they say, he's rebounded like this here, but when he gets to this level, he won't do that. And I've heard that my whole career, literally. And when I was in junior college, I was fourth in rebounding, like 12 a game in the whole country. And they said it wouldn't translate to Division One. They wouldn't translate to professional. It wouldn't translate from second division to first. It wouldn't translate from Champions League to EuroLeague. Okay.
I think it's just something that happens throughout life. Man, I'm 58 and people still tell me I can't do things. So it's like, and I love it every minute. Like every minute someone's like, well, you can't, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. I'm like, all right. I said, we'll see. You just motivate me.
Stop projecting your insecurities onto me. Just because you can't do that.
Exactly.
That's it. Take that one. You know, that's a good one. You can have
it. Don't bring that negativity to me.
Just because you can't do it doesn't mean you got to try and tell me I can't do it to make yourself feel better. I think that's what a lot of people on social media do.
Oh, yeah. It's
they project their insecurities.
I can't stand social media. Yeah. To me, it's all fake anyway. So, I mean.
Conditional love.
I see these people with the selfies and the whole thing. Then you see them in person. It's like a whole different person. You know?
Ooh, we're not going to get into that.
No, that's not good. I want to get into the fact that I came up to you before the game and I said, I need you to ball out for me tonight. And not only did you do it, y'all were down 17 against Panathinaikos. Not only did you do it, but you got to give some love to my boy Cody Miller-McIntyre, who gave me like one of my best like last second comments of the thing. Hey, man.
I'm glad you brought that up. Oh my! I rewatched that. I'm like, ooh, that was a great call.
That was a Cody.
That was a great call.
And I had the time down.
Yes. We talked about that in the locker room. Actually,
you know who that?
I said,
you know who I did that after? You know Gus Johnson in the States.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah, because Gus Johnson did one. I can't remember who it was in the NCAA tournament. Where he's like, game clock off, you know, a shot clock off, game clock at 5. And he just brought it right down to the thing. And my son and I, we always mess with it like that. So, yeah, I was just like, I called him up right after. I'm like, dude, I nailed this one. I finally nailed one. And so give some love to my boy Cody for me, man. That was
Definitely. I will for sure.
Let me ask you about the team real quick, man. Y'all are right now, this is the greatest thing about the EuroLeague, man. I just absolutely love it. Y'all are in 10th place right now. 11-10. I'm sure there's some games that you won you didn't expect to win. I'm sure there's some games you lost that you didn't need to lose. But that's what happens in the EuroLeague.
Yeah.
You're tied. You're in like a four-way tie with, let me see, it's Olympiacos, Monaco, and Partizan.
Yeah.
I think you guys are all tied up. And like I said, that's the greatest thing about this competition. You're a three-game win streak from being in the top six.
Yeah.
And you're a two-game losing streak from being 15th or 16th. I mean, every game matters, my man.
That's the mantra, and it's just there's no other competition that makes it like this.
It's crazy.
Like this is it's stressful. we were just fourth place. Like we were 8-5 at one point. We were just fourth place.
Yep.
And you know that's why genuinely every game matters, and there's certain wins that we had that we worked for, and it was like, yo, that'll come through for us. And then there's some losses that was like, man, hopefully that one doesn't come and bite us in the ass,
right. You
know, come April, because with this play-in situation, it makes it better for teams, because there's what, like you said, 11 teams that really could make the playoffs, but it'll come down to the last day. Yeah. We already know that.
Yeah,
we just want to be on the right side of everything. Yeah.
You hope it comes down to the last day. If not, that means you had a tough couple months.
Yeah, exactly.
I wish y'all luck, man. I want to get up there and do some. I want to do a big playoff game up there. You know, that would be my goal.
I feel like it's in the cards. I feel like it is in the cards.
Who's your boy on the team? I'm thinking it's Marcus, right?
I mean, I'm cool with everyone,
of course,
obviously, but Cody for sure is my guy. We just have the most in common, and I knew him before.
Okay.
You know, I'm very close with Marcus too, but you know, he has a wife, and like, we don't do things off the court
right.
like that, because you know, he's about to have a kid, and I'm alone, I'm single. So in terms of that aspect, it's for sure Cody. Nikos Rokovopoulos, Chris Chioza, Danny Diaz is someone I'm really close with.
Right.
You know, but the team is like, we all get along, and it's a good thing
about playing up there, man. It's like y'all have to become family, because it's so tight knit up there, and you know, you have to be within yourselves. It's really cool, man. And for sure. I love the team. I've loved the club. I've always, you know, everybody's like, oh, you played in Madrid. You won championships in Madrid. You love me. I'm like, man, I love everybody who I played for. You know, that was the main thing. It was just like, just get me on a team and let me enjoy myself. We're about to take this EuroLeague test. I'm going to finish up. I'm going to get to this part real quick. And this is, I know. The test is always, it's interesting. But I think you're going to do good, man. I think you're going to do good. If you did all the research you said you did.
Nah.
Look at this is my thing. This is what I want to finish with before the test is, I've watched you play, all right? I've been talking to you this time. I saw you at the game. I've seen other interviews with you, you know, either sit-down interviews or post-game interviews, whatever it is. And I'm going to give you my opinion, if you don't mind.
I'm listening.
All right? I've been around this game. I've been around this world here for a long time. So I think my experience counts in this. And I think the best thing about you, in my opinion, okay, the best thing about you is also sometimes something that might hold you back just a little bit out here. And that's the fact that you just look like you're having too much goddamn fun playing this game, man. You just look like, it's like, you look like you enjoy yourself so much that you don't take it serious sometimes. And I know you do, because I've talked to you and I've seen your game, and there's nothing that would ever make me think that you don't take this serious, especially after knowing everything you've been through. But that old school mentality, man, sometimes looks like, they look at you like, is he really taking this serious? You know what I mean? But dude, let Chima be Chima, my brother, because I love it. I love it. I think this game and the world needs more people like you on the court. They need that charisma, that personality. And that's just my opinion, and I can't say this really, but fuck old school mentality, man. Just keep doing what you're doing, and I love it. This is the best competition in the world, and you're bringing something else to it, and I think that's you know, I'm a fan, dude. I'm that's all I can say.
Yeah, that's a great compliment, and it's a very honest and truthful opinion, and I've heard it before.
Have you heard that from other people?
For sure I have. And
yeah, but you can't change your personality for nobody.
Listen, I've heard it, and I've been like, you know what, are they right? And then I would have a game, and actually it happened this season. Like, there was a lot of talk about this guy, he smiles too much, and he's interacting with the fans too much, and he's never serious, he's always, and then they said if he was blah, 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 he would be better. And then the game against Fenerbahce at home, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to smile at all. And I was terrible. We ended up winning, but I was horrible.
Right.
Like, I didn't have fun. Like, I wasn't a good teammate, because I was, like, focused on not smiling and making sure that I didn't have fun. But then my brothers called me and said, you better not ever do that again. Like, They're in Australia waking up at 4 a.m., 6 a.m. to watch me be me.
Right, exactly.
And watch me be an extension of themselves. And they know me, and they could tell something was wrong. And as soon as I said, yeah, man, I've been hearing all this chatter, they said, man, F that. Like, you better not ever let them get to you ever again.
Man, don't let people take you down from who you are, man. That's the bottom line.
Can't.
Yeah, you constantly smile on the court. Wait, I mean, whose business is it that you're smiling on the court? I mean, you're not doing it in a disrespectful way. You're just enjoying. I mean, you generally appreciate where you are today and the road that you had to take to get here. And
1,000%.
Who's got the right to try to take that smile off your face, man?
None of them.
That's what I'm gonna walk in the game with a big sign like this and let Chima be Chima.
I will post that photo. I will retweet it. And I will do all I need to do. But like, yeah, I don't. I hear the chatter, but to me, it's just chatter because I look at life like this. Everyone can find, and everyone finds something to be upset about these days.
Yep.
People complain about everything.
It's all about negativity, so if I was, man. It's all about negativity.
People are so negative. People are so negative. Honestly, like it scares me how negative people are because I think, is your life that negative that you have to bring everything else to be negative? And do you, so look, if I'm out here and I'm like, okay, well, I'm about to be in the public eye for this game, so let me go and not be Chima. Let me fake it. And then people are still going to complain about something, and then I'm going to be upset at myself.
Right.
And I'm going to go home and be like, damn, that wasn't Chima, and people are still upset. I can live with myself when I'm myself. I know that. People aren't going to, not everyone's going to like it. I know that.
I mean, there's no way everybody's gonna like it. Even if you were serious, people would be like, "Oh, he needs to smile more."
So, come on, man. Yeah. They say that about one of my teammates, Vanya Marinkovic, and I'm just like, these are the same people that are saying that I smile too much. Right. So people are hypocrites.
Exactly.
Like that's the world we live in.
People just sit back and enjoy the show. That's it, man.
Watch the show. Yeah. If you don't like it, don't watch us quit.
Yeah, that's what I always say. It's like I get people like texting me all the time about this game and this commentary, this whatever. I'm like, dude, you got the right to turn the volume off.
Turn it off.
Turn the channel.
Listen to some music while you watch the game. If you don't like that player, watch something else.
Listen, like listen to someone that doesn't know how to say Moneke.
Exactly. Like, come on. There's so many solutions. You're just choosing to be in something that makes you upset.
Exactly.
For what reason?
Exactly.
Like, let's take a step back. You're upset at this guy because he smiles too much. Because he flexes when he gets an and-one. Really?
Dude,
of all the things I could be doing.
I had the guns, man, when I was playing. If I get an and-one, it was bad to the fan.
Come on.
I want to see one one day.
I'm gonna do it for you. I'm gonna write it down and put it in my head for sure.
The crossover test.
All right, my man, test time. I don't know if they told you about it. You got five questions. Each one is incremented by 10 points. Number one's worth 10. Number two is worth 20. Number three is worth 30. I do this every time, and I never remember. I think 110 is our max or something like that. And I don't know. I've done so many of these, I can't remember who did it, but. I think you're gonna get these. This one, I was gonna veto the question, but we'll put it out anyways. Number one, worth 10 points, EuroLeague test time. Who was last season's EuroLeague MVP?
Sasha Vezenkov.
There you go. I've seen your interview with my boy Anthony Goods and Jordan Taylor. So we don't want to get into that, do we? We'll just leave that.
Next question.
I just give you the 10 points and we'll move on from the next question.
Yeah, next question, man.
Which former teammate of yours has played also in Baskonia?
I'm sure I have a couple, but Mike James.
There you go. That's 30 points, man. I'm telling you, I think it's gonna be easy for you. Don't get too comfortable though.
All right, now I'm nervous.
Number three, 30 points. Who's the three-point scoring leader this season as of today with number of three-pointers made per game?
Marcus Howard.
Man, he's running through this, man. 60 points right off the bat.
Yeah, that's
light. He's first with 3.6 three-pointers. Second is Siobhan Shields with 3.2. And third is Scotty Wilbekin with 2.9.
Ooh, Siobhan, that's tough.
I know. I don't think I would have got that one either.
I would not have got that, no.
Number four with 40 points. You're at 60, so this is for 100. I don't have 150 yet.
Come on.
How many coaches have been fired this season so far in the EuroLeague?
During the season?
Yep.
It's been... it's going to be one. It's four. If it's during the season, it's four. Is it five? It's four or five, and I'm sticking with four because it's during the season. I'm sticking with four. Don't scare me, man.
That's six, dude.
So it's five, because dude just got fired.
Exactly. It's six. It's six altogether. It's your boy Dusko. Joanne, you've been through two of them.
Asvel did two people.
Itulis.
Zalgiris Fenix.
TJ Parker, Poseco from Asvel, just recently got fired.
Oh.
And from Zalgiris, Max Vitas. Damn, man. I really thought you were going to get that one.
Oh, my God. So I cannot believe that.
I think you got a chance to tie for the all-time lead with 110 points.
Pathetic.
Number five, worth 50 points to get you to 110. Tell me the exact score of last year's Game 5 between Monaco and Maccabi.
No, I'm not going to get this.
No but, way.
It was, I'm not going to get this. It was, oh God, I can't even, that's a great question. I'm stumped. It was 86 to 81.
Man.
Oh my God, I'm horrible.
You got the 86 part right.
I got 86 right?
Yeah, but the wrong way though. The final is 97-86 final.
We had 97?
In game five. Yep.
Oh my goodness.
That's what I got here. The guy you talked to before the show was my man Pablo. He's the one that does these questions, so.
Yo, Pablo, come on, man.
I didn't even know the dude got fired from Asvel yet. And when I saw it, I was like, damn, I don't think he's going to get this one. Unless he's really on top of his game.
I'm very disappointed. Come on, Asvel. What are you doing? Anyway, I got it wrong.
My man, hey, it's been about an hour and 10 minutes, man. I took you a little bit longer than I should have. Probably a little longer than I expected to. But man, it's honestly just been my pleasure, man. To have, as I said before, a player that you're so charismatic and the way you go about the game. Personally, I love it. I got my Let Chima Be Chima sign. I'm ready to roll anytime you want, man. You're my boy.
I got you. Exactly.
I want to see one day in your league. But at the fans, though, you can't do it at a player.
All right, I'll do it at home because some people
When I played for Malik, I did it to one of my boys that I played with later from Basconia, and he had my name on a list in his apartment.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I was number 8 on the list. He's like, no, I was coming after you if you didn't sign here.
I don't want to be on no list.
No, you'll be on a list. Hey, man, like I said, man, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know y'all are super busy. Got this, man, last 2 weeks have been nuts. Right. I even got a little tired of basketball the last 2 weeks, man. And just best of luck to you. Man, I love you. Peace out, brother.
Thank you so much, man.
I'm watching you, man.
It's been a pleasure. I've been wanting to be on here for a while. And it's finally, yeah, great to meet you, you know, a couple weeks ago. And it's great to be here. But appreciate you. We'll see you soon.
You're the first person that said, man, I feel like I made it because I'm on the crossover.
Come on, man. I've been watching this for years. Like, I'm honest, I'm an honest guy. I knew I would be here, though, so.
Appreciate it, man.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.